Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, live here from WGN Radio. I've got a guy here who has the greatest name who has ever been on the show. I'm not even kidding. The company is also awesome. He's an EY Entrepreneur of the Year awardee, which is also very cool. We've had only a handful of them on the show, and one of them ended up with a big investment for Technori. So let's try to keep this thing going with great success for Technori when we have EY in here. So without further ado, president of DevBridge Group, Otomus. Say the last
name. Adamovicius. Thanks for having me.
One more time so I can try to get it.
Otomus Adamovicius.
Nope. I can't. It's just not even like, I don't have the physical skill set for this.
That's all right. It's yeah.
You, like, we don't have awards for this. I am very known in the show world community here for my inability to pronounce people's names. Anyone. I mean, I'll mispronounce Johnson if you let me. You are the very first name who's ever been on the show that I flat out, like, just... white flagged it.
There was not. You can't crack. It's genetically.
Your mouth cavity
was not designed for this.
I'm Russian. Half of me has. It's like I should. I should have it in me.
Yeah.
But I do not.
Yeah. It's
I
all right. Do not. It's okay. Right. We'll let this.
Fortunately for you, I have DevBridge. I can say that. These are words that I can read and say out loud. So before we jump into like the whole story and kind of your background and the company, why don't we just start with what is DevBridge Group and then we'll talk more about the sort of the journey.
Of course. So DevBridge Group, we are a services company in the technology space. So we do consulting and we design and build digital products for leading Fortune 1000 companies.
And so what kind of products might we be using that could have been built by you?
Yeah, so good question. And those are primarily mobile banking applications for banks. Those could be customer experience applications for folks like large manufacturers like the John Deere's of the world or the CNH's. So we design and build all types of applications and systems that enable these large institutions to interface with their customers or optimize their processes in-house.
So this might be come as a surprise to you, actually. Mm-hmm. I find this space uniquely entertaining and interesting. Most people find it sort of a boring, like weird niche what type of thing. I think that for most businesses at this day and age, and we'll use the ones that you've named as an example, like John Deere, the amount of money that they make is really down to like two or three areas that they can control anymore. Mm-hmm. It's, do we cut down on operational efficiency costs? Mm-hmm. Do we sell more units? Or do we either optimize the SKUs of how many units we sell so we're not spending money on other stuff, or we make a simpler version of the core unit? And, and it's a spot that I don't think a lot of people talk about, maybe because they think it's boring or whatever, but I really think that there's like one of the biggest opportunities for dev shops and companies out there is to explore this area.
Yeah, it's. I think it's, you know, when you think about an organization, and you can take anyone, a manufacturer, a financial services company, anyone else, there's really, the way I break it down is there's the front of the house and there's the back of the house, right? And you can look at, hey, are we able to process, onboard and process loans automatically because we've really built a great algorithm that de-risks a loan and does everything that you need to do from a loan perspective, from KYC to anything else. So can you optimize that back-end process so that you can actually allow your staff to work with the customer and really improve the customer experience? So using humans and replacing all of the processes with an automated workflow from a systems perspective. So that's back of the house optimization. And then, like you said, there's an opportunity in the front of the house where you introduce efficiencies and digitization on how you interface with the customer through mobility, through apps, through systems, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, you know, talking about John Deere and in general manufacturers that build this heavy equipment. Historically, in manufacturing, the competitive edge was defined based on, well, can we build a widget better? Can we paint it with a better paint that doesn't chip? Can we build a better cabin that's more comfortable, right? So you're competing on the hardware edge. Well, all of a sudden now, you're not just competing on the hardware edge, you're competing on the soft stuff, on the software edge, because the cabin has a tablet, the tablet has software. The farmer has an app. He needs to remotely start the tractor so that the cabin warms up by the time he gets to the cabin. So all of a sudden, you're no longer just competing on the hardware, on the stuff that they really know well as a manufacturer. Yep. but you're now competing in the space of software. And so, you know, you hear this all the time on the news that companies need to go through a transformation and get into the software space. Every single company needs to be a software company if they want to survive today. So that's what we do. We get involved with them. And
so it's I got to tell you, it's there's a couple interesting layers here that you kind of talked over, but not you know, not on, that I find really fascinating. So like I'll lead with one of them here. We talk about at Technori on stage when we have our pitch contest. We have the companies come on and pitch and present. Yeah. And we also, of course, usually we'll have like a keynote, and usually the keynote is someone like yourself who's going to have done this for a while and has found great success. And the part that the audience, a lot of times, let's say a third of the audience is in there for, is to get innovative ideas, to look at companies that maybe their business might want to invest in or just steal or just buy, AccuHire or whatever. And we talk to this point all the time with large corporations who come through and they call Technori because they're looking to talk with founders and meet companies that maybe will inspire them or whatever.
Yeah.
The problem with it is to your point, they need to be software companies, but they're not yet. And they're so far from it.
Yeah.
And the amount of cost that is being spent trying to build or rebuild or replicate or whatever the word you want to use for new technology plays is an insane, exhaustive amount of money, because they're just not built. They weren't built as a software company. They were built as a tractor company.
Yeah.
And so the existence of companies like yourself is incredibly necessary, but they're for the last, at least just in my experience, for the last decade or so, I felt like the good majority of them were not good enough. They were not able to understand the, as you put, the in-house and back-house problems. They were great at maybe building tech, but not knowing that the operator's not going to be a tech guy.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I think the technology industry, or the software industry maybe, I think that industry has also changed and matured over time. And
for sure, I agree.
You know, yeah, if you look at historically the way that tech has been handled, it's been IT. And IT is fine, but IT was like running the back office stuff, right? They made sure that the servers were in place and they're running. And then all of a sudden you had development and custom-built tech entering the space. And then people said, you know what? We could do this better, cheaper. So we're going to outsource this to India or Philippines or wherever. And that was a stage where it was a low-cost play to take bodies and displace workers from local geography into a remote geography to do a cost play. And then what we've seen is this notion of product enter the space. And this is really the current play of how do you orient cross-functional teams around a software initiative where you need to have boots on the ground that's close to the business so they understand the business. You need people who understand the vertical. So it's not just a random engineer who's going to be helping, but it's actually people that know, say, financial services that are building applications in financial services. And then you need design. Yep. So how do you do... You know, how do you actually map customer experience? How do you learn from the micro interactions that you build and expose? And so this product discipline and product design disciplines and combining that with software engineering, that's a thing that's been happening over only for the last probably 8 years or so, or maybe even less, right? Or at a mature level for the last five. So it's incredibly new, and it's incredibly tough for these organizations to staff product management because there are not enough people in the industry. There's not enough skill set.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I want to add the one thing that I've noticed is a major differentiator, and particularly just reading the bio of Deb Bridge, but not just you. For the last, let's call it 5 years, I felt like this is also kind of the same time that I was entering the tech space more predominantly, I noticed that most dev shops, mostly smaller dev shops, they weren't trying to accomplish exactly what you are, but I think that they all hoped to get there at some point, took the approach, which I thought was a very big mistake, I thought it then, and I still think today, of being a disruptor. We're going to go into your company, and we're going to change your product, we're going to build this cool stuff, we're going to do all these things. You scared away everybody in the company, they're like, you're going to change everything. And what I've noticed from success is companies like yourself coming in as, no, we're an extension to your team. We want to understand how you do business. We want to understand your processes. We want to understand how this works. And we want to understand how to build something that is right for you and your customer, not we're going to change, you know, blue sky. We're going to, and that's the thing I've noticed. Many of those companies still exist,
sexy,
and do
right?
well.
I think that's why people gravitate towards the disruptions.
It's great marketing, but if you look at the, this is no joke. Yeah, if you look at the marketing, I love it. Listen, nobody loves telling older people how to do things better than me. I love doing that. But I will tell you, if you look at Inc. 5000 list of performers, those shops do like $4 or $5 million in annual revenue. They don't do 40 million. They don't do 100 million because they can't work with SAP Oracle compliant companies because that's not sexy. That's not like, that's not the same skill set.
You know, and it's interesting what you're saying. It's, I think, you know, what we see in a lot of these organizations, they know and they're eager to change and they want to transform. And usually if we get the right stakeholder, like a CIO who's eager to change and he wants to bring us on board to help him do that, they are of that mindset. They actually are of the mindset that you do need to break down walls. You need to cut corners.
Definitely.
But you're right. You don't start out with that, right? You need to understand and learn and build on top of it. And actually, what I do want to say for people that are on that path, whether it's a startup or whether it's a mature organization, a Fortune organization that's looking to initiate that change, what we've seen, and this is not me promoting our services, actually, what we've seen is the best transformation and change comes when you have enabled teams that do delivery on the ground, so they're actually building software and shipping software, and they have then executive buy-in and support from the top down. So you need bottom up and top down working together. And it can start as a micro team that does this, but it really needs to then scale. And I think one of the challenges that I'm seeing in larger organizations is they start these innovation groups inside of the company. And it's like you sprinkle some magic dust and you have innovation sprout all of a sudden. It doesn't work like that.
Yep.
So I think it's what we see is like people try to do innovation outside of their regular business hours. We'll do innovation in this. There's a separate door. You go in, you do innovation there. But then we're going to run our business just like a regular manufacturer. Yeah. We're going to do waterfall planning, waterfall funding, everything else. It doesn't work.
It doesn't. Yeah. So like I spent a good amount of time, 3 years or so, doing exactly what you're just describing. So we had some guys on our team that actually ran innovation over at eBay, which doesn't actually have any innovation, nor does PayPal where they work. They just buy new stuff.
Which is also a fine strategy, right?
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, honestly, we talk about this all the time with the companies that come through us. I believe very strongly in what I call total innovation, holistic innovation, where you're spending 70% of your innovation expenses on incremental core improvements, 20% acquiring and 10% trying to change something transformational.
Yeah.
And I mean, historically, according to Doblin and Deloitte and all the other people who study this, they'll tell you that they've outperformed S&P, those that practice that sort of innovation strategy, outperform S&P by a long shot.
Yeah.
So I'm very for it, but I will agree with you and say that, like, you look at the companies, like, we used to come in and we would assemble a team. I'd bring a couple outside people and we would pick people from across the company to work on a problem. Didn't matter what part of the company you were from. We wanted fresh eyes and a fresh approach. But the problem that we ran into is the same problem that you would run into if you built it your own or if you did what you talked about where they're doing it as like a side project. If the top is not bought into the change and the bottom thinks that you're going to change how they do and make their life harder, nobody's going to do it.
Yeah.
And you've got to come in and go, like, my CEO or CFO or CMO wants to know exactly how I can best get, what's the word here? I can best get an improved operational whatever, just name your anything. Then to take your team and look at it and go, what small problems can we solve for the bottom rung that is doing the operators and stuff to make life a little bit easier? And somewhere in the middle, we'll build the product or whatever. But you've got to have everyone in it. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, and it really helps if you can build a small team and you can demonstrate success inside of the business so that the stakeholders and the sponsors that are actually paying the bills, if they can see the advantages of having a cross-functional product team, if they can see the advantages of running an agile and having iterative delivery and small incremental releases to market and actually customers involved in providing feedback and improving the product as a result, and this applies, by the way, for your audience of startups, right? And just having that mentality and that model, all of a sudden you can start building momentum. And all of a sudden it's much easier to then get leniency when you do need to break the enterprise rules and say, you know, it's a different way we're going to do this. Listen, I know you've been funding based on a business requirement document to date, but you've seen what we can do with $250,000 in 3 months. Just give us a little bit of leniency, fund this product for a year without a specific requirement set defined, and then use an agile iterative process to build, measure, learn, and see what happens.
It is amazingly fascinating to me how much money a company will sink into a solution with no runway. Yeah, it's like
sink into a solution without testing that against an actual customer.
You don't even care. Like, here's a $5 million investment in this thing, and quite literally, like, I'm telling you ahead of time, if I don't have a runway or some way to get this thing going, like, this is gone. This is total shit. Yeah. And they just roll with it. It's crazy.
And it's incredible. We'll see engagements that we come and we get brought in to kind of, you know, like, essentially rescue a sinking ship. And we've seen runway of 2 years to date, $10, $50 million sunk. Software has not seen the light of day. No user has ever played with it. There was not a proper demo even completed.
You hear about it all the time.
You know, and so, yeah, so it's...
Those guys usually, by the way, usually leave the company, spin out and start a company that did exactly what they tried to build for the company, and they're now millionaires. Their stuff's on NASDAQ. But so crazy. This is awesome. I appreciate you taking the time and talking with us and spending this. You're welcome back anytime. I could sit here and talk about this stuff with you literally all day, which may come as a surprise. I'm non-technical, but I am fascinated as can be with it. Where do people go to learn more about DevBridge Group and get involved with you guys, work with you guys?
Yeah, you guys can check us out at devbridge.com. I mean, we have plenty of case studies, and I write and speak on these subjects quite a bit. So there's quite a bit of content that we've produced around.
Where do people go to follow you? I mean, where do people learn more from you?
You know, so actually, most of the stuff I publish on devbridge.com. So if you go,
they got a good gig there. They pay you, and then you get back to the company.
Yeah, I guess you wear a lot of hats when it's your business, right? But most of my thought kind of process goes on the site, and we also publish on video and so on and so forth. So, but devbridge.com is the source of all truth.
I'll say all the truth. I got you. Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
You can catch this episode and more at technori.com. You can download the podcast wherever you get podcasts. Check us out on Spotify. Check us out on social media, Twitter, handles Technori for everything. It's Technori, everything, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And of course, you can follow me at Katoon on the same everything, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Boom. That's a wrap.